WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
CBS News Special Report. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky went to the White House to sign a rare earth minerals deal, but left without putting pen to paper after clashing with President Trump and VP J.D. Vance in the Oval Office in front of the press. Zelensky expressed concerns that Russian President Vladimir Putin would not honor a deal that did not include safety guarantees for Ukraine. President Trump saying,
"We're looking for peace. We're not looking for somebody that's going to sign up a strong power and then not make peace because they feel emboldened, and that's what I saw happening."
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
"I have never been more proud of the president. I was very proud of J.D. Vance standing up for our country."
Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan on the diplomatic impact of the undiplomatic encounter.
"There's about $4 billion worth of military equipment that's set to be shipped to Ukraine. Does President Trump stop that from happening? It could impact the battlefield."
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Bucks with a win at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks with a 121-112 win over the Denver Nuggets. Giannis led with 28 points. Center Brooke Lopez added 22.
"It was big. You know, that was a very big game for us, a great win. It took everyone, you know, and always the crowd always picks us up."
Although the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic, scored 32 points, Bucks head coach Doc Rivers praised Lopez for keeping up with the Joker.
"I thought Brooke was fantastic. You know, we matched his minutes exactly with Jokic, which we don't do a lot. You know, the guys, you know, Jokic, he's really good. He's just really good. I mean, he made the shots he makes. They look like there's no way they can go in. And his passing is something to marvel. It just is."
College hoops, UWM with a win over Oakland at the Panther Arena, 71-66. Marquette is at Georgetown, 7 p.m. tomorrow night. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kalen Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Joe Uli Wilson, the Republican representative from South Carolina, has a great new idea. Evidently, he is drafting legislation as we speak that would create a new $250 bill with Donald Trump's mug right on it. And I got to wonder if it's one of the cartoonish ones, that, you know, like the Rambo looking ones, if it's an actual one or one of the cartoonish ones on the other side. Either way, a ridiculous idea. But the fact that they chose $250 as the number, money for the rich, because I don't know many people who've got $20 in their pocket, $50 in their pocket. In fact, I was talking to a friend the other day who said, you know, 20s don't even matter anymore. Every time I go out, we take the kid out for dinner or whatever, it's $50. So maybe the fact that we're going to see massive inflation under Trump's watch, maybe 250 is the bill. You know, he's doing away with the penny. They're talking about potentially doing away with the nickel. Now we'll have a $250 bill with Trump's mug on it. And the weird thing is I know there are going to be people out there going, yeah, it's a good idea. We should put Donald Trump's mug all over it because he's a true champion of the working folk. Without looking at the policies that are just, I think, going to devastate working people and ultimately going to cost the Republican Party their half attempt at you know, Olive Branch to working people. Now, what I think is interesting, kind of watching Canada right now, because it's amazing to me that working people would look to a couple of billionaires as the saviors of what was once a proud, prosperous working class in this country. I find it very, very odd. But in Canada, Trump has scared the you-know-what out of people. So much so that Trudeau, he's moving on. As unpopular as the prime minister was there, the conservatives were way out ahead. It seemed like the conservatives were going to take over Canada. It seemed like it was going to be an election day romp. Some of the polling I saw was more than 20%, more than 20-point lead for the conservatives over the liberals. And since Trump's been opening his yap, maybe Canada doesn't want to be the 51st state. But evidently, since then, liberals have caught way up, and there's a possibility conservatives lose because of Trump. This is what they're saying. Not because the liberals are doing a great job, but because they scare the you-know-what out of conservatives. Because the Canadian conservatives, not as bad as American conservatives, but still bad for working people. And understand, these are people who do a great sales job. Conservatives are great salespeople because they're business people. They're great at selling you a giant chocolate-covered turd. They're great at that. It's the follow-up. They don't do well. They can run campaigns. They can sell you anything. But it's the follow-up. It's the governing they suck at. And already, just a month in, the experts are saying the economy is showing signs of strain. The fact that you're laying off a large number of federal workers, the tariffs that the erratic use of tariffs. I'm not an anti-tariff guy, but at some point you got to have a policy. The fact that businesses are rattled. They thought they had a friend. And it is reverberating across states and cities because states and cities are going, hey, wait a second. We're dependent on federal funding. They're talking about cutting Medicaid that we depend our budget to pay to get our citizens' health care. What happens when that all goes away? You're going to cause much more chaos. And look, I understand that's what Elon Musk and Trump want. They want that chaos. But they're running on what is a very regressive policy, very regressive agenda. In fact, as I've been saying all along, they're literally taking food out of the mouths of children and kicking granny out of nursing homes so that they can feed the very wealthy. This is a policy. This is very much trickle-down economics on steroids. We're going to take from the poor and give to the rich. Robin Hood in reverse and hope this time. This time, hope that this time it works. Now, again, it hasn't. It was never going to work. But we bought it. And this is where I keep coming back to, the salespeople who sell us these chocolate-covered lemons. The salespeople who sell us these chocolate turds. These bad ideas, these policies that are harmful to working people. Don't we at some point have to hold them accountable? And I look at, we're looking down the barrel of another round of Musk and the Muskrats' greatest hits at firing more people. They're talking about a huge number of people possibly being fired. They're talking about closing, 110 IRS offices where they have taxpayer assistance centers. So if you've got a question on maybe how you fill out your tax form, they're going to be gone. And why? Because that's good governance. That's government helping. I look at what they did with the USAID employees. 15 minutes to clear out their desk. 15 minutes. And I ask, is this how you would want to be treated as an employee? Is this the government-run business or the business-run government that you want? Is this what you were hoping for? Now, some, clearly. Some of my redhead friends who are just, you know, angry at the world, most certainly. But the reality is the majority of people in the polling are showing this. This isn't what they signed up for. They wanted cheaper eggs. They wanted a better economy that they were able to have a little cushion. They were able to put a little bit of money away. They were able to feel some security. That's not unnatural. It's not wrong. And as I've been saying, the anger's real. We all feel it. It's how you get to the place where that's gonna get better. And I'm sorry, firing a large portion of our government in the hopes that maybe you're going to save a couple of pennies, I don't think is the way to go, especially when you're talking about privatizing it. But it does bring me to this interesting question. Because, you know, one of the polls I saw said, you know, 71% of people who backed Donald Trump said that cutting Medicaid would be unacceptable. 71%. Overall, 82% of the people polled in this heart research poll said, no, don't cut Medicaid. This, in America, the fact that you can get 71% of Trump voters and 82% of the overall populace to go, no, don't do this. The fact that you get that large of a number says there's a consensus. There's no gray area. There's no, well, you know, there's both sides. There's no other side. And yet, what did Republicans do? They went in, it's in their bill. Now they're going to say, no, we're not doing that. It's the only way you get to the numbers. It's the only way you get to the numbers that they're saying. That's it. There's no other way. There's no workaround. There's no crafty kind of Elon math. There's none of that. There's just kicking granny out of nursing homes and taking food out of the mouths of children. That's what it is. And then, you know, ensuring that the Musk and his ilk get their tax breaks. So for me, the question keeps coming back, and I've asked this for 20 years. Why is it that working people don't get what we want, what we need, what we have to have? Why is it we don't get what we all say is important to us, which are, you know, good health care, affordable health care, good wage jobs, you know, a retirement security system, somehow safe neighborhoods, good schools? How come we don't get those things? And it's because we're so easily divided. That's all I can come up with. The moneyed interest, they know what they want. They want lower taxes. They want deregulation. They want control. They want to be sitting at the front table to ensure that they get fed first. And they do. Because one, our campaign finance system is so screwed up. But two, these are the people who told us greed is good. These are the people who tell us, you know, capitalism, yeah, for us. Socialism, for us. Capitalism for you. So I go back to, you know, why don't we get the things we need? I talk to people, red hat, blue hat, green hat, no hat. They all say the same thing. We want decent lives. We want to feel safe in our homes. We want to have a couple of bucks in the bank. We want to be able to put food on the table, roof over the head, clothes on the kids' back. We want the kids to have opportunities. How come we don't get those things? Now, what the right will tell you, well, you know, that's individual, you know, personal, pull yourself up, that nonsense. While putting every obstacle in the way to ensure that those without a lot of invisible capital struggle. You know, I got a bunch of email from folks. We had Christian Weller on the show the other day, who came up with this idea. It's not his, but you know, they're reproposing the idea of baby bonds to give disadvantaged kids, white, black, you know, Hispanic, whatever, low income kids, a little bit of money at the start of their lives, just to let it sit and grow. Just a couple of $1,000 to put into an account and let grow to where, when they get to 18, they get to 21, whatever that number is, they have a little nest egg to go, hey, I can try some things. I can go to college. I can start a business. I can maybe, you know, start to buy a home. Or I could just go explore what I want to do with my life. Give me opportunities that a lot of people took for granted. And man, the response, the angry response I didn't get that. And that's the first response. Remember, I didn't get that. Why should anyone else? And it's that thinking that's put us in this mess that makes sure that we don't get better for ourselves and for our children. But the wealthy, they understand it, man. They understand it huge. Elon spent $288 million to get Trump elected. A lot of money. Now we see that the FAA may cancel Verizon's contract. And who will they give the $2.4 billion contract, communications contract with? They're talking about Starlink. You don't think that's by chance? You know, a little quid pro quo. You don't think that that's, well, you know, Starlink is so good. I don't know. I'm buying it. Don't know that I'm buying it. But again, they get what they want. Do we? And, you know, I'm throwing this thought out because, you know, when was the last time there was a piece of legislation that truly was proposed, was debated, was passed and signed with the sole intention of helping working people? We've always got to give the pound of flesh back to corporate America. Every time you raise the minimum wage, there's got to be tax cuts. Every time you do, well, not every time, because when was the last time we raised the minimum wage? They're probably kids, you know, growing old enough to join the military. But I ask this seriously. You know, when was the last time there was legislation that benefited working people? You could say, well, the Affordable Care Act. Yeah, somewhat. The Affordable Care Act did some really good things. Some things I absolutely 110% agree with. Doing away with the pre-existing conditions, scrapping cabs, giving family, you know, access to preventative care, all good things. But we had to do that by ensuring, you know, private profits. Now, you say, well, they capped it at you know, 15%, and that's great. It's still 15%. Whereas Medicare, what 1.5 to 3? The things that we could do for ourselves better, we still had to pay allegiance to the corporation, to the profiteers, to the shareholders. Does that make a lot of sense? No. Because we've been so trained to think whenever government is, the word government is thrown out there, it's, you know, the evil government. No, it's our government. It's how we get what we need. It's how we get what we want. It's how we get what we earn. It's that mechanism by which we do things collectively that we can't do alone. And yet, you have the billionaire class, literally the head of the billionaire class, telling you, no, we're going to start firing workers just without any real rationale. Just slash and burn. And somehow that's going to save us money. When did we lose our sense of reason and logic? These are not smart people. These are people who made a lot of money gaming a system. These are people who understand how to leverage their connections. Starlink potentially getting a $2.4 billion contract from the government. You don't think Elon had a little to do? You don't think the large number of Teslas being purchased by the Trump administration? You don't think that's odd? You should be angry. You should be frustrated. We should be ready to throw these bums out and get people in, working class people, into these halls of power. I want somebody who just got off work, who's running a campaign, who wants to be in office, who wants to solve some of our problems. That's what I want. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Or do I have it all wrong? Is Elon our savior? Will Donald Trump come through and restore prosperity to the working class, to the toilers and those who clean up after him? Do you think? I got bridges. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I want to take a couple minutes and fill everyone in. And I want to thank everyone who sent cards and letters and emails and well wishes on the health of my wife, who, as you know, back in September was hit by a careless driver while she was riding her motorcycle and suffered really... well, near fatal injuries. You know, lots of broken bones, lots of broken, just lots of trauma, and a serious traumatic brain injury that we're still not sure where we're going to end up. But I did want to take a minute to, because people have been asking, hey, how are things going? How are you doing? And we're doing well. We've been home now. We brought Carol home. A little over 2 weeks ago, I guess three now. We've been home 3 weeks, and the progress physically has been fantastic. The therapists that we've brought in to help and to push her in ways that she doesn't let us do has been miraculous. And, you know, so much so that, you know, we are now with you know, assistance, obviously, you know, standing and walking. And that's something that, you know, no one in the rehab hospital or the therapist prior had thought was going to happen. So for me, that's just an enormous bit of good news. And, you know, because my daughter had said, you know, what was the highlight of the week? And I said, you know, seeing mom stand and take those steps, you know, that, you know, of everything, that is, you know, it gives me hope that that she's going to, you know, be somewhere close to her at some point. It's going to take years. We've got a long, long journey ahead of us. But it's that first step. It's that gleam in her eye that there's someone there. That has just, you know, been so fantastic. And again, I wanted to share that because, you know, a lot of folks, a lot of love and a lot of support, a lot of thoughts and prayers, a lot of good vibes, a lot of stuff came our way. And still coming our way. And I wanted to thank everyone who took a moment to send a bit of well wish. Because, you know, look, even in this moment, life goes on. Even in this moment, we've still got to get up and do, you know, got to get the kids off to school, got to get to work, got to pay the bills. As chaotic as things are politically, we still have life. And we still have to get through it. And together, I believe we can. And it's... I just want to, again, you know, reiterate my appreciation because you guys have really helped get us through what has been by far the roughest moments of my life and also our family. So, again, thank you. Now, back to the idea of you know, this kind of community. We're going to get through this. You know, Trump and Musk and their ideologues, they're going to do a lot of damage. We know this. And infighting and tearing at each other and accusing each other of, you know, you're just, you know, trying to be part of the circular firing squad. That's not helpful. It's not going to get us where we need to go. We can have constructive discussions. We can say what we think the best direction forward is. But we've got to come together in a way that I don't know we have in my lifetime. maybe after 9/11 for a very short period of time. Because the damage is going to be real. The suffering is going to be real. I look at my situation. Not sure if Carol is going to need 24/7 care for the rest of her life or not. Right now, absolutely without question, someone is by her side every minute of every day. It's unsustainable for any family to be able, any working family, mine included, to be able to afford to continue that kind of care. And this is where Medicaid matters. And we're going through the process like anyone else would of seeing what's available. And sadly, what we've done to Medicaid is we've made it for the vast majority of families very difficult to get the help that they need. My family included. Instead of saying, how do we make lives better? What Musk and his clan are doing is saying, how do we make people's lives more difficult? I've been very fortunate, and I've said this before on the program. I've always lived within very, very, you know, conservatively within my means. We've never had, you know, giant purchases. I've never spent beyond my ability. And we've saved always enough to last 6-8 months without income. I've done those things to just in case that most families aren't fortunate to be able to do. But at some point that ends. At some point, this becomes a bigger situation than any individual family can weather. That's why you have a social safety net. And when that goes away and they're cutting money from Medicaid. I don't care how many lies they tell you. It's the only way they get to the number that they've thrown out there. This means that you're going to have either people dying in the streets or families that go bankrupt. Because there's no net under the individual, where my wife is unable to do anything for herself, really. Without a safety net, without her family, what happens? These are things that I have talked about over the years in the abstract, not wanting families to be in a situation of struggle, of great pain. But this is where Musk and Trump are moving us. They're moving us. When tragedy happens, families won't be able to respond. When people get to the end of their lives, what's going to happen if Medicaid isn't there as the backstop to ensure that people have a place? What's going to happen? Because understand, they're not concerned about tomorrow. They're concerned about slash and burn today. They're concerned about a political move. They're concerned about a profit move. They're not concerned about you or me. Is there waste, fraud, and abuse in the government? I'm sure somewhere. But is there waste, fraud, and abuse in corporate America? Yeah. Look at the CEO suite. Once we wish government away, our government away, what we end up with is a motive. And that motive is not helping you or me. It's not making lives better. It's not ensuring that there's a net under our feet in the event that we fall. It's about profit. It's about how much can we put into our pocket. It's about whose benefit. And certainly not going to be yours or mine. Not going to be ours. So think long and hard as we look at these cuts. Because Republicans have shown their hand. This is the place where working people need to understand where they are. And we all like to think that we're... And look, I was the same way. I believed I didn't need any help from anyone. I've always been very hyper-independent. Never have asked for help in my life. This is one of those moments that humbles all of us. Think about when and if that were to ever happen to you. And how our government should respond. The pandemic, I had hoped, would have awakened a lot of us when a lot of people lost their jobs and needed unemployment, needed food stamps, needed heating assistance, needed some help to get through a rough patch. They're talking about gutting all of that. They're literally talking about taking us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. They're talking about taking us back to the good old days of the robber baron era, where a handful of people had all the wealth and the working people were desperate and pliable and at their command. Be careful. Be careful what we wish for, because they're about to give it to us. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Interesting times ahead, but I want to hear your thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, maybe a flurry tonight, and windy with a low in the upper teens. Sunshine returns for tomorrow, colder though, highs in the upper 20s, but to the mid-30s Sunday. Mild to start next week with a chance of showers. Highs well into the 40s Monday, Tuesday. Right now it's 33.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian Lomax, defend the vote.
The SAVE Act will make it harder for all Americans to vote. Now you need a passport. Wisconsin specific, 5 million people don't have a passport. Now it's $130 per passport.
Even if you can afford to get a passport, that is a months-long process. Unless you planned a year ahead, you're not going to be able to vote.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I go back to, and we talked about this earlier in the week, Trump's Office of Management and Budget Director, whatever his name is, back in 2023 gave a speech where he said, we want the bureaucrats to be traumatically affected. When they wake up in the morning, we want them not to want to go to work. And you look at the first month of the Trump administration, they're kind of delivering on Voigt's, whatever his name is, kind of delivering on his message. And that is to make federal employment miserable, to make it worthless, and to destroy it, which is why I find it interesting that, and you can file this under, yeah, that's going to keep us safer, that some 23,000 federal prison workers are about to see their pay cut by 25%. You go, yeah, that, how's that helping us make us safer? Also, if it weren't bad enough with the emphasis on maximum elimination, the Trump folks have told every agency in the federal government they have till March 13th to come up with a plan to slash and burn their workforce. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on, what we're seeing, and how bad this could be. I've asked David Gonzalez to come share some thoughts with us. David is the 2nd District National Vice President for the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
So let's go through these one by one. You got this Voigt guy, Vaught, whatever his name is, saying we want to make your members miserable. We want them to be traumatically affected and not want to get up and go to work every day. That's no way to run a lemonade stand, let alone the most powerful government on the planet.
Absolutely not. It's not a way to run the federal government, you know, and especially me as a retired a federal employee. You know, I actually worked in the Bureau of Prisons for 25 years, and I find that appalling. I know when I worked in the federal workforce, we had to come to work every day.
Yeah, you remember those days? Remember the days? Let's go back in the Wayback Machine when you guys were heroes, frontline heroes, essential. Remember those days?
I remember that. I remember being caught up in a government shutdown and not being paid for a couple pay periods.
No, and this is who they're taking advantage of, because part of this plan that they're asking every agency to come up with by March 13th is to eliminate, I forget how they put it, but people who didn't get paid during the shutdown, people that they don't consider, well, mandatory by statute, that I guess would be prison labor. No,
we was prisons was always considered essential. That's why we had to come to work during those government shutdowns, and without a paycheck we had to come to work, and you couldn't miss work. You had to come to work regardless whether you were going to get an IOU or not.
So what's this going to mean if they do, to these 23,000 federal prison workers, if they do slash their pay by 25%? I guess the first question is, can they do it, considering that it's my understanding most of those federal workers are under a contract? And I understand these people don't care about contracts, but can they do that?
I personally think it's against the law, because Congress has the power to purse string. And that, and those funds are already allocated to pay prison workers. So, and the government as a whole, those funds are already there to pay. Congress has already allocated those funds to pay the federal workforce and prisons.
See, this is where I think they understand more astutely than the average person that they can do these things to federal workers. They can abuse federal workers, and you guys don't have any real recourse, because you can't fold your arms, put your hands in your pockets, and march out the door. There, you don't have the right to strike. And even as you pointed out, when they shut things down, you still got to go to work, even though they're not paying you. I think they're abusing that.
I do too. I would wholeheartedly agree with you there.
This comes back to one of those questions of shouldn't all workers have the right to strike? I mean, if this seems to me to be a perfect opportunity. In fact, yesterday on the program, we spoke with Jimmy Williams Jr., the general president of the Painters Union. He's like, you know, it's time for a wildcat general strike to support these federal workers, because here we are in a moment, much like 1981 when the Patco workers were fired, where the movement's got to make a decision on what they're doing, and somebody's got to stand up for these folks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you brought up 1981, the Reagan and Patco, that took away the right to strike when the air traffic controllers decided to strike, and he ended up ultimately firing all of those workers. And none of them, I don't believe, ever got their job back. So that took the right to strike away from the federal workforce. So
not only did they fire them, they blacklisted them, that they never got another federal job ever again. It's that kind of punitive behavior that I expect from Republicans, and I expect to the next level by someone like Elon Musk and Donald Trump. And I'm not saying federal workers should go on a wildcat strike. That's not going to happen. But the rest of the movement should be coming to their aid to say, look, you know, we understand the concept of an injury to one being an injury to all. There has to be some movement-wide blowback. And I guess the question I have for you as a representative of AFGE, are you seeing the kind of support that you would want to hope for from the rest of the movement?
Absolutely. I've had many conversations with state AFLs and different unions, even the Teamsters Union, to see what they could, group of Teamsters over the weekend, after this note issue came out, where they sent a note asking for five things that you did the week before, or whatever the case Elon came up with. But I see the support that's given, because I think the labor movement is at a crossroads right now, because the federal employees, federal unions, our union is low-hanging fruit. That's the way I put it, because, you know, we're easy to get. The president and Vice President Musk, they control our members. So, So they're low-hanging fruit. So like I told the Teamsters, and I, when I spoke with the AFLs, I said, you know, now is us, next is you.
Yeah, no, I've been saying to people, you know, because I get a lot of response, well, I have to justify what I do at work. Like this belief that your members don't have to have any chain of command. They just come in and party all day long because this is what the Musks and the Trumps of the world have said. They're all bureaucrats. They don't do anything. They're worthless. The reality is these are the people who process your claims. So Granny gets Social Security. These are the people who make sure that you get Medicare and Medicaid. These are the folks who make sure our air and water are clean. They're talking about a 65% cut to the EPA. Nothing good can come of that.
Nothing. And especially with this climate disaster that we have, that the administration says that, you know, that we don't have climate issues in the world. So, but nothing good. And the food you eat, you know, who's going to inspect the food you eat? USDA. And this is the thing that I try to tell folks as well. You know, there's programs when they eliminate jobs, there's programs that go away because of they're eliminating a person that runs a program. Like, for instance, I was talking with a young lady that got displaced because of the first memo that came out, the first executive order that came out with the probationary thing. And she controlled a program that aided first-time home buyers for HUD. She was like a consultant for this particular program. So now they took away her job, so that program goes away as well.
Well, isn't that what they want? I mean, they want a weak, ineffective government. You know, I hear people say, I want smaller government. And me personally, I don't care big, small. I want effective. I want a government that does the things that we need it to do to ensure that the air is clean, the water is clean, the food is edible. All of these things, size to me doesn't matter. It's about effectiveness. And I look at what they're doing, and it seems like, just from an outsider, and I hope you'll have a better view, it seems like it's about destroying the effectiveness of government and swinging the power back into the hands of corporate interests to be able to run roughshod over anyone who has the audacity to question them.
I believe it's about privatization. You brought up a great point. I believe that they want to privatize big parts of the government. You know, prisons, they want to privatize. Prisons has always been under the microscope for privatization for years. You know, they want to privatize parts of this government and give it to the ultra wealthy and their corporate buddies.
Yeah, I mean, you, a lesson can be learned when the former Soviet Union fell, and who the oligarchs today are. Were the ones who were able to take over the state-run industries after they destroyed their government. Kind of the same thing is in my mind of being at play here, which is why I think you see so many CEOs and so many wealthy individuals being part of this administration, because they know, at least I believe they know, that once you destroy the government and you destroy the work that they do, somebody's got to do it, and for a price.
Absolutely. And it's going to cost the government more money when they do privatize it, because, you know, the cost is not going to be cheap. And yeah. And there's all kind of studies that the government has done concerning privatization, and none of it was good. None of these studies have ever came out and said that, you know, when the government privatizes parts of government, that they save money. If anything, they spend more money. And this is going to have a long lasting effect on the economy. I mean, you know, you can say people can say what they want about Joe Biden, but he had the economy going in a right place. And this is going to eliminate jobs in a crucial point when our economy was bouncing back and it's still vulnerable. And the elimination of these federal jobs is going to have a long lasting effect, because now you're going to have people without work, and it's going to hurt small business and businesses in general, because you're going to have people with less money to spend now.
Yeah. But David, how about them eggs? How about them eggs, David?
I know I just went to the grocery store and spent like $13 for a carton of eggs.
How about them eggs? I mean, look, you know, the sad reality is you're right. All of the moves that they're making are about making working people's lives worse. And, you know, I want to go back to that list thing because I got a lot of response from people who said, look, I have to be accountable at work. I have to, you know, justify what I do at work. And look, I think they know what they're doing messaging wise. It's about divide and conquer because a lot of people don't think your members are answerable to anyone. And the reality is in our government structure, there are a lot of voices that you have to justify your work to, as I understand. There are lots of chains of commands, and just Elon Musk shouldn't be at the top of it.
Right, right. I know as a former prison worker myself, as a former prison worker, I had on any particular shift, I had at least 3 to 4 bosses that I had to account to. And that has always been the big problem in government. They have more supervision than they have worker bees, than they have the people that actually do the work in the field.
So hold on.
They're always top heavy in management. So this thing that there's nobody there to supervise you is very, very false because the government can't go without a high level executive or a mid level manager, but they can go without the workforce.
So here, could this be the message then? Yeah, there is waste, fraud, and abuse. It's the people who are overseeing, the people who are actually doing the work. You know, maybe we get rid of some of the upper management. We get some actual people doing work. Look, this is one of those messages I think that resonates because all of us work for companies and for employers where there's always someone over our shoulders, a camera watching everything we do. Are we fighting back on this front to say, look, it's not just about not being accountable. It's about who we're accountable to. And Elon ain't it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think you're right. That is a good message to put out, you know. And like I said, I had that experience firsthand because I worked in the government for 25 years. And this thing with the pay retention for the prison workers, with them cutting the prison workers' pay, prisons has always been shorthanded for decades now. They have always been shorthanded. Right now, you have less correctional officers than you do administration staff or management, and then they force secretaries or a plumber to come in and put his workload aside to do the work of a correction officer because they don't have enough corrections officers. So what do they think by cutting the salaries of these dedicated federal employees, these public servants, and that already don't have enough staff? The same thing with the VA and SSA, short staffed.
So let me ask you a last line of questioning because we hit on this a moment ago. For me, the kleptocracy is real. I do believe. I believe this administration will be the most criminal administration in history when generations look back at it. We talked about privatization and the prisons being, let's just use that as one example. Is it your thought perhaps that they're trying to make things so unbearable, cut staff so low that nobody wants to work there to where they throw up their hands and go, look, clearly we can't run this, but there's this for-profit corporation over here who does it just fine. Granted, we have to guarantee, you know, 90% heads in beds, and we have to make sure that their profit line is fattened and satisfied. But hey, they can do it. Does this seem plausible?
I believe that you're right. I believe that's their intentions ultimately. I mean, look at the organizations that they want to touch. They want to touch Social Security. They want to touch the VA. They're making inroads now towards the Bureau of Prisons. These organizations already are, like I said, they have a problem today with shortage of staff. And so, you know, so by cutting them even more, goes to your point that, you know, they want to make this work so hard and so difficult. You know, why do most people get into government jobs anyway? Because they feel like when you have a government job, unless you come in and mess up some type of way and get disciplined and lose your job, you have some sense of security,
yep.
A job security. You know, the federal workforce doesn't make a whole lot of money. You know, they're not like these high paid jobs. You can actually, most cases, find that same job and make more money in the public sector.
But hold on. I'm hearing these are all six figure, you know, cushy corner office, white shirt and tie jobs. That's not what this is?
No, that's not what this is, Rick.
But I keep hearing there's all this fat and bloatedness and all these big salaries. Am I missing something?
Yeah, you're missing something. You're missing something there. Like I said, they're top heavy in management. You know, those are the SES jobs and things of that nature. But and they may make the top money. But I know when I was a federal worker and I came in, I started in 91 as a correction officer. I made more money in the public sector. I took almost an $18,000 a year cut to come in to do into the federal workforce.
Wow. So what you're telling me is they're lying to us.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm shocked. Shocked I am. So what do we do? What do you want me to do? What can we as citizens do to wrap this up? What's the marching order? What does David Gonzalez want me and our viewers and listeners to do?
Well, first we need to start by contacting our members of Congress, especially those Republicans that are kowtowing to President Trump. We need to put political pressure on them that they break ties with President Trump and Vice President Elon Musk. So that's one thing, and then the second thing, we just have to continue to be vigilant. And be vigilant and ask questions and continue to fight back, get in these streets and protest and let them know that we're not going to stand for it.
There you go.
But first and foremost, we need to make those calls and we need to make those visits to our congressmen, go to those town halls as they're doing already. You see the Republicans are pulling back now. I've seen in the last couple of days because they got blew up at their town hall. So now they don't want to have no more town halls with the public because they don't want to see that pressure.
This is why I've been saying Democratic Congress people need to adopt a Republican, get into those districts where Republican representatives are failing to hold town halls and hold them for them in their district. Just my thought. But David Gonzalez, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again as this moves along.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much, David Gonzalez, AFGE's second district national vice president. Want to hear your thoughts. Has there ever been anything that we've privatized? Anything, you know, prisons, parking authorities, turnpikes, anything we've privatized that's actually worked in our interest, been cheaper, better, more efficient, anything? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that Sue Cowan Williams filed a lawsuit for equal pay for black teachers in Little Rock, Arkansas. 86 black teachers worked in the city's segregated school system. They were all members of the Little Rock Classroom Teachers Association. In 1941, the teachers formed a salary adjustment committee to look into pay discrimination. What they found there was a wide gap between black and white salaries. The average white elementary school teacher made 5 $526 a year, while the black teacher earned only $321. White high school teachers brought home $856 a year, while black teachers only made $567. Backed with this research, the committee presented a petition to the school board demanding an end to pay discrimination. The board tabled the petition, and that summer passed another round of unequal pay raises. The teachers then approached the NAACP and asked them to handle their case. Thurgood Marshall agreed to take up the lawsuit. Marshall would go on to become the first black U.S. Supreme Court justice. Sue Cowan Williams, the head of the English department at Dunbar High School, was selected as the plaintiff for the case. The teachers lost their lawsuit and then won on appeal, but Williams paid a price for her involvement. The next school year, the school district did not renew her contract. She was finally rehired to teach at Dunbar a decade later. But first, the school's superintendent called Williams to ask her if she had, quote, learned her lesson. It was a lesson that many workers have learned, that there is often a high personal cost for standing up for justice on the job. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So privatization, yeah, I believe that's a big part of the goal. Obviously, the kleptocracy, obviously line their pockets, you know, like more Teslas. Evidently, we're going to buy a gazillion more with Trump than they would have done with Biden. So you go, well, is that possibly why Elon spent $288 million to get Trump elected? The $400 million in Teslas that are, maybe, you know, maybe that was the sales. Maybe that was the quid pro quo. I think it's much, much, much bigger than that. But you stop and think about what they've done thus far. I mean, the big one, you know, the fact that you fired these nuclear weapons experts and then couldn't find them. You fired the people who were working on bird flu and then couldn't find, canceled Ebola prevention programs, did away with funding for Lutheran charities, for foster care and adoptive services. You can go down the list of all of the things that they've done. Oh, oops, sorry, we made a mistake. This is not how you run government. And I think we're going to, as I've been saying, I think we're going to see people who begin to understand that there's a reason that government moves a little slower than maybe the cutting edge of the private sector. Because one, profit is not the motive. Money is not the motive. Service is the motive. Getting people what they need, that's the goal. That's the product. Not returning money to shareholders, which is kind of what they're spinning. This, you're going to get a Doge refund. You're going to get a Doge refund. Yes, you are. One, no, you're not. But two, this idea that we're going to take government down to that transactional level, instead of saying, no, it's how we get the things that we need collectively that we can't get individually. When we need to do something like pave a road or provide health care for a populace, you do this through your government. The private sector isn't going to do it without massive amounts of profit. So I go back to, you know, name one thing. And I've been asking this question almost 20 years. Name one thing that we've privatized. Water authorities, sewer authorities, you know, parking, you know, turnpikes. What is it that we used to do for the local public swimming pool? Tell me something that we've privatized that is working better, is cheaper, is much more efficient, and is for the benefit of we the people. Just one thing. That's all I want. Been asking that now, as I said, 20 years. Because it's not out there. There's no golden unicorn. There's no, oh, hey, there's this. Look how wonderful this worked in the hands of the profiteers. That's sadly not how it goes. I can point to a lot of things. Turnpikes, for instance, that they jacked up the tolls and then returned a crummy road that they didn't maintain, only for the taxpayers to have to clean up the mess. We could point to those. But none of the success stories. Not even one. That's the weird part. And yet they keep pushing it, keep selling it. And somehow they're such good salespeople, we seem to keep buying it. Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, freespeech.org for the video. And as always, appreciate you being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. No rare earths minerals deal was signed at the White House today because Ukraine's president had a heated exchange with President Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance. For a ceasefire with Russia's president, Volodymyr Zelensky wants security guarantees. Trump saying after the exchange,
it didn't work out exactly great from his standpoint. I think he very much overplayed his hand.
CBS's Ed O'Keefe reports the two leaders have a shared history.
Both TV stars before being elected presidents. Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky was at the center of President Trump's first impeachment. He was accused of asking Zelensky to investigate unproven claims of fraud committed by Hunter Biden. It's something Trump referenced.
Him? Russia, Russia, Russia. You ever hear of that deal? That was a phony Hunter Biden, Joe Biden scam.
Trump has more recently called Zelensky a dictator and falsely accused Ukraine of starting the war with Russia.